Hello, everyone. Catherine here. I'm starting 2019 a couple weeks late, but who cares? Who's watching? We're here. We're back. Smart Mouth is back. Hooray. We're kicking it off with Natasha Case. She's the founder of Cool House. That's spelled C-O-O-L-H-A-U-S. You've definitely read about her ice cream sandwich company before, and now it's in pints and grocery stores, and they're doing a vegan line, and she's just started a podcast. It's called Start to Sail. I'm enjoying it. She's a busy lady, this Natasha. I also wanted to mention that I am going to a podcast festival in Portland, Oregon, the second week of February. It's called Listen Up Portland. And I'm going to be doing a live show on Saturday, February 16th at 2 p.m. I think at a bar. The details are still TBD, but it's coming together. I'm really excited about it, and I'm excited about what is essentially my first trip to Portland. I'm going to eat in all the restaurants, and please tweet at me, at Catherine Spires, and tell me which restaurants in particular I should go to. But yeah, if you are able to come to the show, tickets are $10, and you can find them at listenupportland.com. Yay, come say hi. Also, if you're enjoying the show, please tell one of your friends about Smart Mouth. I really appreciate you all spreading the word. All right, on to the episode. About once a year, I will buy a box of cereal. Usually either Rice Chex, Corn Pops, or Kix.
Ooh.
And the reason I only do it once a year is that I can really house that box in a day.
Amazing. What's happening on that day when you're housing that box? Like, is it just...
It's probably a day where I'm like, uh-oh, mental health-wise, things are not looking good.
Okay, cool. I was going to say some, like, you know, a trip to, like, the local, you know, THC CBD source. Or...
Yes, probably. It goes hand in hand, doesn't it? Yeah. It's legal in California.
It really does fit the bill. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There is such an upscale cannabis store very close to me.
Cool.
And it's interesting how going in there, like... First, you feel like you're doing something wrong because you enter it and there's a hidden door. And you have to like announce yourself there, and you know that there's cameras and all that kind of stuff. But then once you get into the actual area, it's like being in an extremely upscale jewelry store.
Oh, totally. The display and the merchandising.
Yeah. And the things that they've done with packaging with cannabis.
It's become really beautifully branded.
So beautiful.
Yeah.
Which I think is something they have to do to make it seem even more legitimate, right?
Yeah. I think also just like why wouldn't it be? I mean, especially these products, you know, they are still a relative expense, you know? Like you want something that also feels high. High end if you're spending the money.
Yeah.
And I think too, something I've seen that's gotten a little better is kind of like clearer description of how much you should have and what the amounts are and what they mean, because that was another thing of, you know, for our generation who it started out being wrong and it no longer is. But that was an issue too, is like people are just baking things at home and bringing it to a party. You have no idea the dosage.
Right.
You have no idea the potency.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like even if I didn't believe in legalization and ending prohibition and all that, I would have to say that legalizing it, one of the boring but good things about it is just that, is the standardized dosing.
Totally.
They have to label it like it's food now.
Yeah. No, it should be that way. It's just, I think it's a better experience.
Absolutely. You know? Freak out.
Yeah. Like that was the constant thing also with our generation. Like you are, it's not working. It's not, I need more, you know, and you're just like totally like, you know, who knows where that situation's going to end up. But I like am particularly interested in like the super, it's almost like the micro dosing of the edibles. Like I think like such a small amount that it's almost like having a beer, or that you can easily have it in the day and go on, you know, like, so there's also, it gives more opportunity to like explore the occasions for the different doses.
Yeah, right? I think so. But it turns out you can still be an idiot and misread a label.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a THC and CBD product. For our listeners who aren't as well versed. Okay. You can probably hear Matilda freaking out in the background. She's playing with
her toy like
corn.
CBD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I had this tincture that was CBD and THC, and I mixed up just reading it wrong.
Okay.
It was a 4-to-1.
Yeah.
But mostly THC. Okay, and I had it wrong in my head. I got so high, this was only a couple months ago, that I actually went out and sat on the sidewalk because I figured that I was going to die and I wanted my body to be found quickly. Oh.
That's such a marijuana-induced line of thinking.
Yes, exactly. So I was real
happy. Like extreme Jewish hypochondriac also.
So I've got
bucket.
All of that going
yeah,
for me.
I can be one of those as well. So yeah. I definitely can relate.
I was really glad when I wasn't high anymore.
Yeah.
Well, that was an experience.
But, you know, look, I also find some of the packaging is still, it's still in its infancy. That's what's cool. Like now we feel like, oh, it's been around and there's all these brands. Well, no, if you look at, you know, the trajectory, if you compare it to alcohol, I mean, there's still so much, I think, like discovery and learning how to label things clearly or to just educate people more on different purposes.
Yeah.
So what's amazing is it's like, it really still is just getting going.
It absolutely
in so
is.
Many ways.
Yeah, no, it is. I think it's going to be really interesting in that some people are going to make a lot of money. Actually, this is not planned, but I should promote the cannabis business podcast that we have on the network. It's called Green and Gold. So everyone should check that out. They interview people who are in the industry and are figuring out all the ways that they're probably going to make millions. But then also talking about like, the weird thing is my dad was in jail for this and now I'm allowed to become a millionaire off of it. So there's a lot to explore
on
cannabis right now.
Yeah, totally. And look, for the disruptive thinkers, those will be the ones who are thinking outside of the original constraints of the industry when it was, you know, like widely illegal. So I think people who are willing to kind of go out of the box and execute, like, you should have a shot at being a millionaire
Absolutely.
Or a billionaire.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. Now, you came into your industry from a different way, but there was never any issue of you breaking laws. Maybe some health codes at the beginning, because starting food businesses, it's like, what are these weird rules?
I have some stories about that.
I bet you do. What did you do wrong?
Oh, let's just go right there, I think, right? Let's just get right into it. The original truck that we launched with, we had very, very humble beginnings,
right.
You know, so because we were 25 when we started, we were coming out of the recession. My former career was architecture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so this is not like we had these like necessarily like, you know, business like portfolio to show to raise money, for example. So very humble beginnings. And I really wanted to do this, you know, food meets architecture concept that I had sort of discovered in undergraduate architecture studio, which I can tell you more about. But, you know, kind of as far as like the launch strategy, you know, we had this like food meets architecture idea. We wanted to do these, inspired ice cream sandwiches named after architects, baking everything from scratch, making the ice cream from scratch. And so really the only kind of option we saw to enter the marketplace was, you know, a mobile food truck. We couldn't afford, you know, a Scoop Shop wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
We didn't understand grocery. And even with the mobile food truck or, you know, ice cream truck, we had so little to spend on it. So, yeah.
And this was in 2009?
2009, exactly.
Which was really when the sort of gourmet food truck idea was really
It was totally in its infancy. Yeah. It was like, it was super pioneering thinking, even in general. Well, I guess I'm backing up a bit, but, you know, back then, we take it for granted now, but you walk down the freezer aisle in late 2008, early 2009, there's not this plethora of, you know, craft ice cream brands, unique flavors, storytelling like you do now. So we walked down the freezer aisle and frankly we just didn't feel represented, you know. These were brands that had been around forever and really weren't innovating, and so that didn't speak to us, and we definitely didn't feel represented as millennials, and we didn't feel represented as women. So I think we saw an opportunity not only with the product but the culture and the lifestyle of what could be done. So there was something there and we knew we had to act, and we literally, so after going to the grocery store, we came back home and Googled hipster ice cream truck. We were like, if we're going to do this, let's see what's out there. Like nothing came up. Not even kidding. There was one like cool ice cream truck that sold records and like merchandise. We're like, we have to do this. Like how often do you not have millions of hits on any Google search?
Yes.
Let alone that.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
And I think we now own those Google AdWords, by the way.
Of course.
Full circle.
Gotta lock those down.
But anyway, back to, you know, the illegal crimes. So we have this like, you know, POS truck. Mm-hmm. I'm allowed to, it's on a podcast, right?
Yo, swear your
shitty
heart
truck. Yeah. did I say shitty truck? So we had found it on Craigslist.
Uh-huh.
And we went out and checked it out, and you know, it was just like, it was not drivable.
Okay.
It was just totally like, you know, a piece of crap, but it did have chrome rims.
That's
so
cool.
We settled on the price of $2,700 for the truck.
Okay.
We towed it back to LA.
And it wasn't a food truck, right?
It was a postal van that was kind of being used as an ice cream truck.
Got it. Okay.
Right? So it had like some of the basics.
Got it.
But no power steering. Like it was definitely, mm-hmm. the steering was on the right side of the truck. It was definitely like a mail van.
Mm-hmm.
So this truck, you know, was really meant to, if at all, the only possibility was really selling prepackaged ice cream.
Okay.
And what we wanted to do was hand scoop ice cream sandwiches, you know, scoop to order, choose your cookie, choose your ice cream. Uh-huh. And we had really kind of made that decision because we launched at Coachella. And that's where we realized like it was just better to let people, you know, create their own, and frankly, just a much easier operation in that format.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we had kind of come to like, this is what we're going to do. And this is what people love. And, uh-huh. and this is America. People want to choose, you know. So after kind of Coachella had happened, and it really went viral from there, and it really kind of took off. So we immediately just fixed up the truck with like the super basics. I'm talking like get a logo on the truck, mm-hmm. make the doors operable, make it so it can drive. But that's really all we could afford to do.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we went and got this permit for like, you know, pre-packaged ice cream sandwiches, because that's all that the truck could be permitted for, based on the size, based on different aspects of the how many sinks and the plumbing and all that. And so we basically just hit the streets because, you know, we just got to get this out there.
Yeah.
This is in demand. People are calling us. People are wanting this.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in the beginning, it as the industry was just taking off, it wasn't sort of being scrutinized, mm-hmm. very much. So
I remember that.
We could go out in the truck and, you know, scoop to order the ice cream sandwiches with, you know, different kind of permit. It was mm-hmm. all good. And basically what happened is one first Friday that we were at, which is that festival in Venice.
Uh-huh.
I actually had a health inspector call me. This is how like, you know, we were like, there was camaraderie between the health department and the trucks. It was like not this like antagonistic thing in the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, they're scooping the ice cream on your truck. Like you have people here and they're scooping. They're not prepackaged sandwiches like your permit says. And I was like, oh God, how could they? How dare they? This is a prepackaged operation. I don't know what they're thinking. I will speak to them and it won't happen again. He's like, cool. Okay. Well, nice to talk to you, Natasha, you know? And, so like, that's that. Fast forward maybe a month or so, I'm on the truck.
Yeah.
And I'm selling in Santa Monica. I have a huge line.
Uh-huh.
Health department shows up and I'm definitely scooping to order uh-huh. the ice cream sandwiches. Uh-huh. And they're like, we told you that's not what your permit is for. And you are in deep trouble now. So they pour bleach in all the ice cream. It's the saddest thing.
Oh,
I have this huge line.
That pisses
you know,
me off.
Just like can't sell it, haul it away. You know, it's just the whole, it's a like act of humiliation.
I mean, you just said they weren't antagonistic, but that sounds extremely antagonistic. I think most people who listen to the show have seen the footage of like government agencies pouring bleach on like raw milk and all that sort
yes,
of stuff.
Oh, yes, totally. Definitely like that kind of, I mean, I think in that situation, they went in with like guns also.
The one in Venice Beach?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
I know. It's outrageous.
Yeah, so this was, there were no weapons.
I'm glad.
That I'm aware of.
Yes.
But they used the weapon of their, you know, emotion. It was a very, very sad day. I remember I had to go eat like a giant bowl of pho after to feel better. Then I felt okay. And then anyway, so the follow-up is they said, we're taking you to court. And so I literally had to go to court. It was the People versus Natasha case.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh my
and
gosh.
And also so like this level of offense was I guess similar or must have been similar to a DUI.
Okay.
Because everyone else with me in the courtroom, that was their charge.
Oh my gosh.
And I didn't know this, but when they call you up, because you know everyone would go up for the judge kind of one by one, then they call you up, they read your blood alcohol level. From when you were, you know, pulled over or arrested.
I see.
So there'd be like these little old ladies like, Mrs. Jones, please come, you know, before the judge.
Gosh.
Mrs. Jones, 2.1.
Oh
and everyone
gosh.
Would be like, oh, damn, you old man, you could have done, what were you thinking? You know, people were like, each time it was so rowdy. It was kind of amazing. And finally they get to me, you know, the People versus Natasha case. And I go up, and there was actually a really like comfortable chair. Okay. So I sat next to my, you know, public defender. Mm-hmm. And I sat in the comfortable chair. They're like, stand up. What are you doing? I'm like, get out of the comfortable chair. Okay. And then they're kind of reading, you know, okay, the sink wasn't right or this and that. And the public defender, she leans over to me. She's like, it's an ice cream company, right? And I was like, yeah. She's like, do you do kids parties? I said, I do. And she said, what do they cost? I was, you know, $5 a sandwich. She's like, okay, let's talk after. I was like, oh, I think I'm going to be okay. I totally was, I'm going to be fine. Like, she was amazing. And like, business is going to move forward. And that's indeed fantastic. They basically were like, you have to build a proper truck. And then we'll kind of waive all the stuff, which is great. It's the law should be that way, where it's like, okay, you did wrong, but show us that you can do right.
Okay.
And it's all good. Okay. And that's essentially what they did. So we did. And it lit a fire under us to build the proper truck, which mm-hmm. we needed to do anyway. And mm-hmm. we needed more than one truck already mm-hmm. anyway yeah. to meet demand. So end up being like, yeah, kind of like a little slap on the wrist to ultimately do the thing that was necessary anyway.
That's exciting. Anyway. And I'm glad that like you didn't have to go to jail for it or anything.
No
like
jail.
That.
No jail.
It does seem like you guys use a lot of creative thinking at the beginning of Cool House. There's this.
Indeed.
I found an interview from at least a few years ago in the LA Times, and there was a line in it that I feel like went kind of unexamined in it. It was just the sentence that I was like, huh.
I love this.
So,
God, what did I say?
Coachella is in the town of Indio, mm-hmm. Which is like 150 miles away from LA.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Well, we got one free 200 mile tow from AAA,
so
and that's how we got there.
This is what I want to ask you, because the sentence is, the Craigslist ice cream truck had no engine, so Kay bought a AAA Premier membership, which comes with a free 200 mile tow. And that's the whole, there's no follow up to that. It's just that I was like, did you
wait a second,
tow yourself to Coachella?
We did. We indeed did. Bootstrapping, my friend.
Yes. I love that. That's so funny.
Yeah.
So how did that go down when the tow truck driver showed up?
So he shows up. Yeah, this was like the luxury membership or like the platinum, and mm-hmm. you got, I remember that tow, and you got a free towel that said AAA. You know, I was like, oh, this is happening. So the guy shows up. I think like we basically pretended the truck broke down, even though it never drove.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure he was on to us, you know, in our minds.
Like, we want to go to this music festival.
Yeah, we need to get there. I don't know. Oh, was the engine just gone? I didn't notice that. It's like, I think in our minds, we thought we had totally like, you know, the deceit was like masterfully executed, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. I think he was mm-hmm. like, these girls just like really need like some help, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he agreed to do it. He had a flatbed, uh-huh. put the truck on the flatbed. I followed his car, and Frey was with the tow truck driver, you know, in the tow mobile, and mm-hmm. I'm following. And what's funny is like the truck, it had a camper roof, so it was like modified to be taller than the original postal van. So basically I remember as we're like getting on our way, and we start to go under this like underpass on the freeway, and I'm falling, I'm thinking like, damn, that's like looking like it's going to cut it really close, because we hadn't, you know, measured or factored in or any of that.
Yeah.
And so like as it's going under, I remember breathing like, like, God. I think it probably cleared by maybe a couple feet, but that looks really close when you're about to. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So despite the obstacles, she made it and the truck made it, and they just like kind of plopped it in the Coachella campground. And that is how we launched.
It's funny how stressful starting a business can be in ways that you never even expected, like not running into freeway overpasses.
Yes. No, there's look, I mean, here's what I think about it. One, we weren't putting all our eggs in this basket. Like, mm-hmm. You know, we still had our full-time jobs.
Okay.
And I think you really have to do that in the food industry, because it's just, it's such a challenging world to be in terms of really getting to a place of sustainably making money, that it's kind of better to grow and incubate idea as long as possible to alleviate some of the stress that like can come with starting the business. Because honestly, like, it was sort of like very intense, but I don't think I felt actually that stressed out, because I was sort of like, look, we have nothing to lose. We know there's a moment to do this.
Yeah.
Like, we think we have like a kind of crazy creative idea, and we're willing to give it all it takes to execute it. If it doesn't work out, we go back to our, you know, regular lives.
Yeah.
So that really helped. I don't know if Freya would say the same. I think Freya was quite stressed out.
I mean, it's all mindset, right?
Yeah.
It's just like how you choose to look at things. Actually,
totally.
When we're recording this, yesterday on Twitter, there's this big brouhaha about something Conan O'Brien said about how he was talking to someone like either Mel Brooks or Al Brooks about like how stressful it was to like entertain people every night.
Yeah.
And the more famous person he was talking to was like, what do you care? We all die anyway. And how Conan O'Brien was like, that's, and ever since then I felt fine. I haven't felt any stress because we all die. And yeah, it doesn't matter. And it was interesting.
He'd be a great Jewish hypochondriac.
Yes. It was interesting seeing the responses because some people were like, whoa, is Conan O'Brien okay? And other people were like, this is wonderful.
This is a reframe. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally. It's like, I think actually what it makes you do is just really live in the moment.
Yes.
And appreciate all you do have going instead of worrying what could not happen.
Yes.
Or what could be missed.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, actually, like, this is a really, I have the opportunity to be on stage and entertain people and make them laugh.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give it my best.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you know?
I know. It's so hard to change your mindset if, like, you're more of a stressed out negative type, would guess.
Well, you know what? The half glass fulls need the half glass empties. We all like work together, I think, in some. Because for me, I started the business with Freya, who, you know, we're now married, have a child, everything worked out. but she, you know, like, for me, I'm like the, like, fearless optimist, and not to say she's fearless too, and she also like definitely sees the bright side, but like she was the one to be like, well, how about this, or this has to come back to reality, like we can't just do that, like, so it's a check and balance, but I think that ultimately, if you want to be an entrepreneur, you kind of have to see the problems and the challenges as like a thrill. Like, okay, how can I go and solve this?
Right.
Or how am I going to, for me, I kind of think like, when I tell the story of how this crazy thing happened, like, how am I going to sound in this story? Yeah. Am I going to sound like I just lost it?
Interesting.
Am I going to sound like I kept it together and I took the steps to solve the problem?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I'm launching my company too, the production company, Table
Amazing.
Cakes.
So cool.
And thank you.
Great name.
Thank you. Thank you. And it's, you have to either be like, oh my God, this problem is insurmountable, or be like, hey, fuck you, problem.
Yeah.
So I imagine that dairy products in general are of interest to you.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I would say yes. And also just frozen dessert.
Okay.
And also just kind of, I think it's even broader than that, especially for me with Cool House. I feel like down the road, we could even break out of frozen. You know, we
really?
Could do. Yeah, absolutely.
Like
I
what?
Think so. Well, you know, there's a lot more to do with dairy. And then we have Dairy Free coming out this year, which I can tell you all about.
Yeah, a lot of companies are doing that.
Yeah,
that, now, be honest, is that because you want to? Or is it because it would be stupid not to?
Yeah, I have to say that it's much more the former, because what, for me, like, what's always been great about Cool House, people are like, how did you know to do that or that flavor? Mm-hmm. Well, we're a company that is becoming less rare, but it had been rare for longer, where we are our own target consumer. It's just been like a really cool journey to create that product. And I believe that people who are dairy free and who love dairy will love it equally.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
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 Did you do frozen yogurt?
No.
Okay.
We did not. Yeah. But yes.
So, so Greek yogurt is one of your favorite foods or go-to foods.
Yes.
But you didn't do frozen yogurt for your company.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. I hear where you're coming from, and I think I need to take some thoughtful moments.
Well, you know, it's interesting because
it's still possible.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with. I think people talk about trendiness and sort of disparage it, but there was a moment when frozen yogurt.
Yeah.
There have been a couple moments in our lifetimes when frozen yogurts was a thing. There was like TCBY, and then there was Pinkberry 15 years later. But if it's not the thing to do right now, then it's not the thing to do.
Well, here's my thing. Whether it's happening right now or not, I just don't know if the frozen yogurt kind of what it takes to make that as a dessert belongs in our ethos, because it tends to be more of a low fat, high sugar. All said and done.
80s style dieting.
Totally. Yeah. To make it freeze properly, to get the texture right.
Yeah.
So, you know, that we're more into the high fat, and we're, you know, they do have sugar. It is an indulgent dessert, everything that we make. So that doesn't fit. However, what could be interesting is like a Greek yogurt ice cream, or kind of more like you would see in Europe, is kind of that more sour, but also still high fat And, you know, there could be delicious honey, delicious granola. So there's something there, but so I don't know that possible? It would be a frozen yogurt.
Yeah, I know. I wonder if it's possible to have like an indulgent frozen yogurt, which first of all, like in America, I don't know about in Europe, but in America, people would be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
This is for our 80s style diet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's possible. And maybe we're on to like next year's innovation.
Yeah, maybe.
Know? Yeah. Could be interesting.
There's so many times on the show where I'm like, P.S. give me 10% if you actually do this idea.
Done. Just don't tell my investors. They're not listening.
Okay, yeah. Great. Yes. So let's talk about what yogurt is, not just what it could be.
And what it is not.
Yes. So it's fermented milk, which is basically like their beginning and end of what it is.
Yeah.
It tastes different than milk. It has a different texture, so we can use it for different recipes,
right.
That sort of thing. But probably the most important thing, as with so many foods that are ancient and worldwide, it's preserves food.
Yes.
So you've got your milk that's going to go bad in a day. You just ferment it, turn it into yogurt. Now you've got it for a week.
Yeah. That's I love it.
Yeah.
Isn't that a beautiful thing?
Yeah, I think so.
Because food waste is such an issue in this country. Mm-hmm. And there are solutions like that that are great. And it, you know, you have to kind of learn the basics, but it's not actually that hard to do if you like kind
yes.
of go through like spend yes. the time. And then they're delicious and in many ways, I think, even more versatile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that in America, mainstream America, we're starting to come around to fermented foods. The very idea of fermentation as being healthy, which is right. our culture to be concerned with whether or not
culture?
It's healthy.
Yeah. Told you I'd have some pun jokes for you.
Oh, when I was researching this, I kept thinking we're living in a bacterial world and I'm a bacterial girl.
I love that.
That was fun for me.
That's good. That's a good tagline.
Yeah, for sure. But there is something to be said for if we learned how to ferment our own food. Like if you've got a carton of milk and you're like, oh, this is starting to turn.
Yeah.
Make it into yogurt.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that our culture doesn't think about as right. much. Like how to save
the
this.
The culture thing is distracting yeah. me now.
Sorry. Our yes. society.
Oh, thank you. Okay. That's good. That's good. No, I think that's really true. And even kefir versus yogurt and those mm-hmm. have become, I think, more knowledge around that, which I love to have kefir always at the house.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually have raw kefir.
Because
you can
bold.
Get it in California.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were talking about the whole raw. I think it's even more delicious and even more nutritious in some ways. I think like the different types of, even just if you're looking at dairy, the formats in which you ferment it and what it can be used for or the use of it
yes.
is interesting.
Yeah, totally. There's a lot of stuff we can do with food if we get creative with it and if we have the
yes.
time and the inclination. So many societies have yogurt. But the word yogurt is Turkish. And it's the earliest written references that we know are definitely about yogurt are from Turkey and area and places around that now country. And I think that for people who are familiar with Eastern Mediterranean and Central Asian food, you see how much yogurt is used.
Totally.
And as we were saying, like the difference between sweet and savory, I think in America, it's thought of as like a sweet breakfast
yes.
or snack, but it's a
shifting.
Savory
yes, totally.
Item in a lot
totally.
Of the world. Yeah.
Totally. It's almost buttery.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's weird because I have really started eating Eastern Mediterranean food, cooking it a lot at home. And I eat highly spiced chickpeas with labneh.
Yes.
Which is like the super thick yogurt.
So
and it's
good.
Weird because it's like my favorite meal to eat now. But every time I make it, I'm like, is this gross? Because it's not in my head to
yeah.
use yogurt like instead of a rice.
Yeah. But interesting.
Why would I put chickpeas and rice together?
Yeah.
That's just doubling up your carbs.
You want your amino acids.
Yeah, exactly. It makes so much
yeah.
more sense.
It feels maybe like a better balance.
Yeah.
Have it with the yogurt.
Yeah, yeah, but it still like always strikes me even as I'm like totally chowing down. I'm like, is this weird?
Right.
It's just not what I was raised with.
Yeah, it's so true.
I was really...
It's cool that this... I mean, so I have a son who's almost two.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think of the foods he's already been introduced to and had and mostly loved are so many things like that I didn't even come to until much later in life. And, you know, look, I'm from California. I'm from LA.
Yeah.
That's been multicultural for a long time. And we had, you know, in theory, like the access like that, the typical access one would have to whatever, you know, interesting food is in the market. But I don't think I really, really like started having avocado, I would say, until like middle school, high school.
Really?
Yeah. Like, that was not a thing that was just around the house when we grew up. Oh, for sure. Sushi, like, definitely later. Like, maybe we went a few times and we got, like, basics. Like, yeah. Not, you know. But Remy's had his first, like, raw roll, aww, you know. And before that, he'd had, like, crab. And he'd been to sushi restaurants probably 10 times before he was, like, you know, even, like, one and a half. And avocado, like, chips and guac is, you know, it's just, it's like, so they'll grow up, you know, just more and more of kind of these influences and just it won't seem normal.
Which is so cool. And I think might be, like, the best thing about living on the Pacific Rim. And I do think it's the entire Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
Because people just, like, can't get enough of crisscrossing the ocean.
Yeah. No, that's...
and bringing their foods with them.
That's great. I'm not complaining.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Turkey-wise, another thing that's different about the original yogurt is that the farm animals they had were not cows. They had sheep and goats. And it wasn't for their meat. It was for their dairy and for their wool, to a lesser extent. So here's the thing. We got to talk about lactose intolerance, because it's a big part of why yogurt is so popular, is that most people, I think that's the correct way of putting it, most people are lactose intolerant.
I think almost 80% of the world.
Yes.
Technically. And there's a spectrum.
There totally is. Yeah. So what this all is that we are all born, humans, with lactase already in us. That's an enzyme. And that's so that we can be breastfed. But then once we're not breastfed anymore, lactase disappears, and that creates lactose intolerance. Mm.
So it doesn't disappear for some people, but disappears for others?
Right. It says that, so generally worldwide, it's like 65% of the population is lactose intolerant, but in some areas, it's like 90%.
Yeah.
So it varies based on your ethnic background.
I think Caucasian is most likely to not be lactose intolerant. Is
correct.
That right?
Yes, yeah, that is. But when you ferment milk, aka making yogurt and cheese, most of the lactose turns into lactic acid.
That's right.
Which people can still deal with.
Totally.
So that's why more people can, like, hang with yogurt and cheese.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's so true. Versus drinking, like, a glass of milk.
Yes.
Or having a latte. And Yeah. Totally.
Which is awesome because since we're not getting, like, milk straight from the farm, we're getting the pasteurized stuff. Milk isn't the most interesting food you can consume, but I would say that cheese is the most interesting food you can consume.
So interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So, there's this thing that happens a lot in food history where people are like, oh, the first time it happened must have been an accident, because they're like, how did these ancient people figure out how to put bacteria into milk? They must have accidentally...
It must have gone bad and then,
like,
they found...
Or like a leaf fell in it and rotted it. Or the idea being that if you transport milk, like, in... what do you call it? Organs that are now bags. That,
totally.
Like, it picked up the bacteria from that. I mean, maybe. But here's the thing. All these ancient civilizations that had yogurt, they also had beer and they also had bread.
Mm-hmm.
So people, I would say, know what fermentation is.
Yeah. And in order to survive without refrigeration... You know, like, pastrami was, like, Romanian.
Yes.
Carried under the horse's belly is where I think it, like, kind of cured or however. And the whole point was that it was preserved for as long as possible because these are not, you know, wealthy groups of people. So you needed protein that could last 30 days. Mm-hmm. So it comes out of, so much also comes out of, there could have been an accident, but also kind of being... inventive out of necessity.
Well, and I think that just because we don't have written record of, like, scientific experiments and theories and things like that doesn't mean that it didn't happen. I mean, we always like to think that we're smarter than our forebears, but the truth is, like, they were figuring out how to feed themselves.
Totally.
Without Googling it. So.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's true.
So I bet it wasn't an accident. Here's something I didn't know. Different... lactobacilli or bacilli. I don't actually know how it's pronounced, but lactobacillus is the main bacteria that ferments yogurt. They taste different.
Hmm.
If you get one from one place and another from
that
another
makes
place,
sense.
you get different tasting yogurts out of them.
Yeah, I believe that.
Totally. I had never thought about that.
We really don't understand bacteria at all. True. Have you looked into this? It's fascinating. Like, I think it was a New Yorker article I read where mm-hmm. they're like, we understand like 1% or less of the bacteria on our earth. Like, it's such a mystery and it's everywhere. I mean, soil and, you know.
Yeah.
So like, who knows like kind of what and why is differentiating it.
Totally.
And the other thing that first of all, I always believe it's better to get things like probiotics from food, mm-hmm. but I've also been looking into the probiotic thing more, and it's like we're all basically our own specific like mother bacteria, you know. So one that could be really helpful for someone may have no impact on another, or it's like you kind of have to find like your bacteria identity, you know.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that either. Yeah. So like if you are taking a brand of probiotics and it's not doing what you want it to do, maybe switch brands.
Like yeah, it almost like they almost need to be like custom made for you in a way. Like it's crazy. Like it can't be like, oh, one generic one's going to be the one for everyone necessarily, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. But maybe you find one that really is, could also be trial and error.
Yeah.
That could also be the case, that there's a particular brand or a particular, you know, origin or whatever it may be that uses the one that mm-hmm. that just is a better fit for your body.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So most big yogurt companies actually have their bacteria made for them in labs.
Mm.
So theirs are custom ordered.
Totally.
Probably more to do with like the resulting texture of the yogurt, how a particular bacteria affects that, and that less to do with health. But it's not like artisan sourdough where they're like, oh, we had this mother since the 1880s. They're like, we make this in a lab for consistency, I think.
That's true.
So I would say that yogurt really started popping off in America when Greek yogurt was introduced as this concept.
It will definitely change the yogurt game in a huge way.
Yes, absolutely. But even so, we consume now in the US 62 cups of yogurt per person per year.
Wow. And
cup is the way that it's measured. Yeah.
One in 5 days, basically.
Yeah. So maybe that's a lot. But in Turkey, it's 282 cups per person per year.
Yeah. It's a daily thing.
Yeah. We are really not that much.
We got to catch up.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. There's no reason not to. It's so good for you, except for if you're vegan, of course. So if it started in Turkey and around Turkey, yogurt mostly went east.
Mm-hmm.
And Europe didn't really get into it until like the late 1800s, and it wasn't part of American culture until Danon started mass manufacturing yogurt out of the Bronx around in the 1950s.
Right.
So that is a brand that
it's a post-World War II food.
Yes.
Yeah.
As most of our foods are.
Yeah. Which was a huge game changer for how we ate. Yeah.
And so we didn't really eat Danon.
And food on the go, I think, kind of started to happen around then, like wanting to have more, less the making of the meal. And it was the beginning of convenience.
The idea that we're so busy.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Couldn't possibly cook.
Exactly.
I grew up eating Yoplait.
Hmm.
And I thought it was so good. And now, I had it a couple years ago and I was like, what is this liquid plastic that I grew up eating? So weird.
A lot of foods, I think, I think the bar has been raised so much.
Yes.
But I do also find in general foods that were like my favorite thing as a kid, and like you have this whole memory of them and you try them now. But and like I said, some of this is just that the ante has been upped.
Mm-hmm.
But so often they're like extremely disappointing. They taste flavorless.
Well, and another thing I'm experiencing, I think I'm officially getting older. I don't want to like sound sorry for myself. I'm 36 years old, and what I have noticed is that most things are too sweet for me now.
Mm-hmm.
Just I have
your palate changes.
Yes, I have that old person reaction where I'm like, oh, God, so sweet.
Yeah, totally.
To so many.
Well, you want the balance, and even though our ice cream is a sweet, we always have like the dirty mint. It's not like these extreme oils and extracts and a super sweet mint. It's real mint leaves and brown sugar, which is less sweet than regular sugar.
Yeah.
So it's more of like a, almost like a Moroccan mint tea kind of experience.
Yeah. And I've noticed with like more of the like mass market ice creams, I don't like the way that they taste anymore.
No.
I have gotten so snobby
about
desserts, and
Good
I'm super like, especially at restaurants where I'm like, but is it salty? I want it to be salty.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
That's my jam right now.
I can't think of a flavor we don't have. There's almost all always some element of salt or savory.
Because you got to balance it.
You want to balance it. And I think it's just more interesting that way because you don't want dessert to be one note. That's a danger that can happen with it. You want it to have complex and complexities and layers and really make people stop and think, I think.
Yeah.
Which I have to say when I go into like, for example, our Culver City shop is next to our headquarters. Sometimes it's like really quiet in there because people are eating the ice cream and like or the ice cream sandwiches and concentrating so deeply.
Oh, that's funny.
And it's like almost this whole like thoughtful experience.
That's
which is totally what we're going for. That's what we want it to be. We're thoughtful about how we do it.
Yeah.
And it provides an opportunity to be thoughtful and really pause and like take it all in, you know?
Oh, that's so cool.
And the other thing is, you know, with a big, big differentiator besides, well, there's many, but the innovation level, the artisan quality of like, you know, the quality of the sourcing, the kind of like the uniqueness of how a flavor might be represented in a pint. But one of the biggest differentiators between quality levels is the air. You know, in a lot of these bigger flavors, like the ice cream I grew up eating, it's just it was light or it was whatever it was because it's just almost like one-to-one ice cream to air.
Yeah.
And in quality ice cream, that density of flavor comes from a really, really low amount of air. We pretty much have the minimum that we can put in.
What is that called? Overflow?
Overrun.
Overrun.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Yeah. So this is something
you're good. Yeah.
This is something that people don't know about ice cream.
No.
But to your point too, when they call themselves like light or low, low calorie or something like that, often it's that there's just less product in the pint.
Yeah.
And if you're stretching at the store and you pick up one brand and pick up another brand, they weigh different in your hand.
Yep. You can feel it. Like Breyers can say, oh, their ingredient label is clean, but you could carry that quart around with your pinky.
Yes.
I have.
Yes.
You know, and you really feel the difference in premium. And so with Overrun, a lot of people don't know the word. You're right. And so actually, but they do know what the end result means. If you talk to people about eating super premium or like high quality crafted ice cream, they can identify the end result. It's creamy, the texture, I taste things more, I see things more. That's what the low overrun creates, and that's what our very much our you know our ethos is.
Yeah, so it has a different flavor profile because like it's kind of like how gelato is more intense.
I was just gonna say and they're really interesting because it's not cream, it's milk.
Yes.
But it's very low overrun, so that's why you feel like you can eat it almost every day on vacation because you're not getting necessarily the butter fat, but you are getting the density of flavor that's so satisfying.
Exactly.
And actually Cool House, we don't overdo it on butter fat. It's still in that super premium, you know, genre, but I actually like it to not be overwhelming, but be really, really low air. And especially in an ice cream sandwich where you have two cookies also, you don't want to feel disgusting. We want you to be able to eat this like more than once a year,
maybe
282 days a year.
Yeah.
Like Turkish people eat yogurt, you know?
That would be ideal.
Yeah. So you have to really like think about your product and why people are using it and what and how much you want them to have. And, you know, there are such particular points to address. And I think you really, really make it your own. And then you just like dominate, you know?
But I think you might be overestimating how much people, even if they don't know the term, know about it. Because I saw a friend post on Facebook about how she was like, you know, I've been eating Halo Top and it's so low calorie.
Saw my face.
But yes, I did. But then like I held it just the same thing. She's like, but then I realized like I held it with Haagen-Dazs too. And I realized that it's just like it weighs like half an ounce. And so
the
I don't
number one ingredient in Halo Top is air.
But they don't list it. It's just like by volume.
Yeah.
You mean, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
That's
exactly.
funny.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think people, you know, I don't want to say we're playing the long game in terms of like we are growing a lot. So we are looking year to like get people the best possible ice cream and ice cream sandwiches or whatever products we create possible. But we are playing the long game in terms of when you make something that's quality, it never goes out of style, you know? And I think when you do these weird things with air or weird artificial sweeteners or whatever it may be, they end up being fad driven.
Okay.
And people are not going to buy them constantly throughout the course of their life. Like, I feel like you could eat Cool House, you know, for 100 years of one's life and we'll keep making new flavors and new products and making life interesting. You know, and so I think it all kind of works itself out. I always say we're in the game of one person buying us 1,000 times as opposed to 1,000 people buying us once.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just different business philosophies. Yeah. Really.
And totally, like, yeah, to each their own. And yeah, if, and no matter what, to grow a brand and have a lot of people even just try it is really, really hard work.
Yeah.
So no, it's not without recognition, but that's definitely not our strategy. Our strategy, right, is to really have people fall in love with the brand and to be heavy users, as, yeah, we like to say.
Yeah. I love to be a heavy user of ice cream. That's my favorite thing.
Oh, amazing. Love it. I love it. We'll get you some of our latest treats also too. You know, hopefully have fun with. I know you said sometimes it's hard for you to have fun with because you know so much about food, and but like hopefully
just
it's fun for you.
Just crying and be like, I know, yeah, what every ingredient,
yeah, yeah,
is.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so Greek yogurt, the more healthier than ice cream.
Okay.
Maybe a little more
versatility.
Boring.
Oh, my number one thing I love about it, besides taste it because I love that sour like tang, mm-hmm, is the versatility. I use it in dips, in dressings, mm-hmm, marinades, for breakfast. I kind of sometimes just have it in the salad as the protein kind of like on the side. There's so many uses, as instead of sour cream, instead of mayonnaise, yeah, you know, like,
do
that's
you
what I love.
Do that for health purposes?
I do feel that it is lighter. Like I will feel lighter after, but okay, I will feel no less satisfaction. People are so often shocked that Greek yogurt is the base, mm-hmm, of whatever we made, as, mm-hmm, opposed to, you know, they thought it was something richer.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be clear, Greek, when we say Greek yogurt, we're talking about just thicker yogurt, and it's, right, really just an issue of how long you drain it.
Straining, right. Yeah. Totally. Exactly. Yes.
So the like American style yogurt, I guess what we would call it, that is not strained a lot.
Yes.
So to make it a thicker product, you just strain it a lot.
Exactly.
More. Although we're saying straining like it's the 1800s and we're in Greece, the big companies, most of what you're going to buy from a supermarket, they actually just spin it.
Yeah.
To separate it. Mm. So it's all mechanized.
Right. Because I wasn't sure, like, with the straining, like, I was reading, like, okay, then there could be a lot of byproduct, and where is that going?
Right.
You know, when something becomes such a mass industry, yes, versus being made more traditionally in generally more artisan ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is just not the,
yeah,
deal anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think there are some, you know, depends on the brand.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
And there are ranges.
Buying, like,
yeah,
your Chobani or,
right,
for instance,
right,
that's been,
that's
spun,
an example of, yeah, yeah, totally. That's one of the largest there is.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so New York State has traditionally been a center of dairy production.
Yeah, upstate, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they had some minor chaos when Greek yogurt reached this like peak market saturation than it did, in that they had all of the whey. What the liquid that's being spun out is whey, as in curds and whey.
Yeah.
And it's highly acidic.
Yep.
And so
this is exactly what I was saying, then the byproduct.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah.
So they, a thing that a lot of food manufacturers and farms, that they work in tandem together. The food manufacturers sell like their product that they don't need, their, mm-hmm, byproduct, mm-hmm, to farms to be animal feed. But apparently what I read is that the yogurt whey, it has the exact same qualities as orange juice. Mm-hmm. So they can't just feed it to the cows willy-nilly because it'll just be
high,
like,
acid,
giving them high acid, yeah, and just like a bunch of sugar.
Exactly.
They'll go nuts.
Yes, yes, totally. Oh, that's interesting.
And then it's too acidic for it to be like, it can be a soil amendment, but it can't just be the straight up fertilizer that,
right,
they use in fields. So they have all this stuff and they can't dump it into the water. I mean, you know, big companies do all kinds of unethical stuff, but technically they can't just dump it into the water because that'll change the pH of, yeah, like the algae and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So they're creating all this acidic stuff, mm-hmm, and don't know what to do with,
yes,
it.
Yes. I have been following this.
It's an ongoing
for
problem,
the big,
isn't
for the
it?
Big, big boys. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just sort of one of those things, like, you know, it wasn't a product that, like I said, that was prepared to live at that kind of mass level.
Yes.
If the way it was traditionally made and consumed, or, yeah, how it was made. So yeah, that's that. And this is an issue, you know, in general, I think, with just a lot of our food systems, you know, when they become so, so big,
mm-hmm,
and just the difficulty to kind of tackle those things that happen at that kind of scale.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think that there's so many things that people don't know that they can do at home. Like, you wouldn't, mm-hmm, think that you can get regular yogurt and then continue to strain it, much less make your own yogurt, which,
right,
means cooking milk.
Totally.
There's things, but we don't, this is something I talk about all the time. We don't have home ec, mm-hmm, anymore.
Yeah.
So people don't know these things.
Yeah. for example, during the whole romaine crisis, we grow a lot of lettuce. That's one of my favorite things to grow because we eat salads so often.
Yeah.
And to not have to buy it is great.
Yeah.
And we were like, kind of, I felt like devilishly laughing to ourselves because like, we know our romaine's fine. This is really the only way right now you can know it's okay.
Absolutely.
Is if you grow your own.
Absolutely.
And I was like, you know, we were like parceling it off to people because like, romaine, Caesar salad desperation. But, you know, so things like that, and like, not to make it all sound too easy, or sometimes there's just not, you don't have the space, but if you can, something to consider.
Yeah, if you can. I read an article making fun of some institution that's teaching like life skills classes to adults, and they were like, oh, people don't know how to do stuff. But I'm like,
yeah,
well, yeah, exactly. They don't. Like, if you don't get taught it as a child, then either you never learn it or you get taught as an adult. And it was one thing they were talking about was sewing buttons.
Oh, interesting.
And I was like, every time I've sewn a button, I doubt I've been doing it correctly.
Yeah, right.
Because no one ever taught me.
Yeah,
that's how you learn to do things.
Right. Yeah. Why not get these basics?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's so empowering then when you get them.
Yes.
You know, like figuring things out is like very empowering.
I agree.
It's so satisfying.
It totally is.
Yeah.
It totally is.
Even if that's like telling your Alexa to do something and giving her a new skill, you know, that's satisfying.
Giving her a new skill. That's so weird.
Yeah, it is. But you know what? I love it. So let me just be in my corner happy about it.
All right. Allowed.
I think because I have a 2-year-old, anything that can be voice activated is like money.
Yeah.
You know, because like you just don't always have your hands.
Right.
Yeah.
And see, that's just, I'm very anti all that kind of stuff, but I don't have a kid, so I can't
possibly. That's
okay.
And you're allowed to have your opinion.
Yeah.
Even if you have a child and you're anti all that, then all good.
Right. All that slow living stuff. So here is a fun for everybody, not fun for Greece little thing. Greek yogurt, that's not a legal term.
Huh.
That's just a phrase. And the country of Greece really goes through it. I feel bad for them. They've been trying for years to get it to become an official designation, which really means something in Europe, where it's like origin of designation, I believe it's called, which is like champagne, capital C. It can only come from the champagne region. The various cheeses can only come from
specific regions.
So Greece has been applying to all the different, like the EU Agriculture Commissioner, and then there's like...
Give it to them, you know? Give them something.
Let them have something.
Yeah.
But they can't win the argument.
Yeah.
Every time they try with like a different angle, it's like the EU comes back to them with like, but you know that it's just like strained.
Yeah.
It's just like thick yogurt.
Yeah, totally.
And like it's made all over the world.
How about like Icelandic? Do they have that?
No.
No one has it.
No one has
okay.
it.
Okay, yeah.
But Greece is the only one that keeps fighting
there's what's called Skyr. There is like even more strained.
Yes, exactly.
They're
but that's
really
just
straining
it.
Things up there.
Yeah, exactly. Like Iceland and Greece have nothing to do with each other, but they both
it's
eat
just,
thick yogurt.
I saw that Danone is they've done like a hyper straining that it results in like 2 grams of sugar yogurt that they say is really tasty. I think we'll be seeing this product soon. I saw it in one of my nerdy food newsletters.
Okay.
Yeah. So interesting. Yeah. Yeah. It's gonna be like a full like kind of more. You know, like low carb or keto type food.
And both General Mills and Chobani have been sued by individuals in the United States for labeling it Greek yogurt.
And?
The companies won because they're allowed to call it Greek yogurt.
Because
doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, right. Totally.
It's like natural, which is a food term that I think people think means something.
Yeah.
I just want everyone to understand natural doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. It's no longer, I mean, at least the food brands in the know are no longer really using it because of that.
I've been surprised
at
how there's, well, first of all, I have an issue with organic too, because organic doesn't mean that no pesticides were used.
Yeah.
It means that certain selected pesticides were used. They're still pesticides.
Yeah.
And also the organizations that can designate something organic, there's different ones across the country, and they're sort of like para-governmental bodies, and like so even organic, I'm like, mwah.
Yeah, I think no, it's true, and I think here's my philosophy on it. I mean, going through the vetting process of all of these things, the non-GMO project, organic, it's all very, very intense. And so to go through it, you do have to really consider a lot of factors, and there are a lot of restrictions.
Yeah.
Like, is it better that it's there? Yes. Is it the only thing to live by? No. For example, you know, like the most important thing with dairy is that it's hormone free.
I agree.
You know, so
which is hard to find.
Yeah, well, ours definitely is, and a lot of the brands that are smart know that it just needs to move in this direction. Yeah. I saw even Kraft, like, their singles are going to be hormone free, like, uh-huh. good. Like, I think that's number one.
Yeah.
Hugely a difference between regular milk that's hormone free and organic milk. The organic milk is actually pasteurized at a higher temperature, mm-hmm. so you'll see it has a longer time before it expires. So in some ways, the not organic milk is actually fresher and more nutritious because less of it has been cooked off. So, you know, it's like knowing the nuances, not just living and dying by those,
right.
I think is so important.
Right.
You know, for the companies that have to go through it, you do have to get a lot of things vetted, but sometimes a company is really small and doesn't make sense to go through that process. And they may be more organic in some ways than the organic certified.
So
it's just being aware and also being aware of what the company, like, trying to picture yourself on the other side, because people do get like bonkers about things, and just like, you know what I mean? Like research it and be in the know and empower yourself, and then just, you know, do the best you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not everyone has the time or the inclination to do any research, but if you do, it's good. There's a pizza place here in LA that...
If you're going to have a strong opinion about it, then do your research.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But there's a pizza place here in LA that I actually really like the food, and I respect the chefs, but they have a big sign on their wall where you order that says no GMO wheat. And it makes me so angry because there isn't any GMO wheat commercially available. They couldn't use GMO wheat even if they wanted to.
Interesting.
And I hate that they use that as a selling point, knowing that it means nothing.
Do you think they know, though? I think some people may not know.
I think that the bold name owner of this place knows so much about what goes into pizza dough that there's no possible way.
It. Yeah.
That this person doesn't know that.
Interesting. No, that's an interesting point.
Yeah. And I, there's actually so many articles that I want to write, but the state of journalism that it's in right now, I'm not getting paid $200 to write an article that's going to get me hate mail. So there's so many things that I'm just like, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, I know. And we've shared many topics. I'm sure many people have lots of opinions
But
you know, it's good. It's a conversation.
Absolutely. And I also think that people who listen to podcasts, maybe it is because it's a conversation and they can hear more of the nuance.
Right.
But podcast listeners tend to be friendlier than the type of person who would tweet at you that you should die. Like, at least in my experience, this has been like, people who read the articles tell you that you should kill yourself, whereas the podcasters are like, we've had a conversation about something.
Right.
So that's another fun thing about podcasting.
No, that's interesting. That's really true.
Yeah.
Even within different social media networks, there's like, you know, more or less of that.
So true.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's weird. And also, people, if you read an article and feel inclined to tell the writer of it to kill themselves, don't. Just
good
don't.
Point. Like, I'm with you on that.
Yeah,
I'm with you on that one.
It doesn't help anybody. Right. It's probably not even good for your own soul.
No, exactly.
To be
That's
saying
the thing.
Stuff like
that. Just don't do it.
Ugh, goodness. You know what's funny is that we went off on this tangent, and then I realized that it was actually the perfect segue because we're done talking about yogurt, and now I was going to talk about your podcast.
Oh, great, amazing.
Yes. So you have
a friendly podcast.
It's called Start to Sail. I'm assuming you haven't gotten any death threats off of it yet.
No, and I have to say to thank the fans because we've gotten such incredible feedback.
And in your trailer, you talked about how you, as podcast hosts, aren't journalists. You're people who are in the industries or the same type of roles that your guests are in.
Yeah.
It's true. It's a different take on it.
Yeah.
And you're more like in the shit and you have more frame of reference with your guests.
Totally.
Well, Natasha, thank you so much for coming on the show, and everyone should go check out her podcast. It's called Start to Sail, and I'm assuming it's available anywhere you
Apple
Podcasts,
Spotify. Yes. And thank you.
We should spell it. It's sail as in sell something. Start to S-A-L-E.
Yes.
Start to sail as in a boat would make sense too.
Oh,
so
interesting.
We should clarify.
Oh, I like that.
Start to sail.
You were supposed to say it. Start to sail.
Okay.
That's what they had us like.
Because it's in the business sense.
And you can quickly kind of, you know, if you're a host. So there's like the enunciating is key. Also, they were always saying CEO is something people like. I just kind of did that. Go CEO. Because it's like people don't, you know, we speak so quickly, typically, at least maybe us coastals.
That's very true. We elide everything.
Yeah.
It's true. Awesome. Well, Natasha, thank you so much.
It was great to be here.